Hello! Welcome back to the final episode this year of the Album Files podcast. This is it for 2023. I can't believe we've made it, to be honest, but here we are. We are giving you all this bonus episode to chat about our favorite albums of the year, favorite songs of the year, our Spotify Wrapped / Apple, what did you call it, Ian? Bitten?
I think it was Apple's Eden, but I don't think that was a good joke, so I'm really annoyed that we're bringing it up again. And I have this memory of thinking, whilst I was saying that we could just talk about what our favorite types of apple were, but then I also don't think that that's...
I have a really good story about that, actually.
Tell us the story. I suppose we're doing this now.
I haven't even got through the intro yet, and we're already derailed. I love it.
Yeah, I haven't even introed you two.
And that's how I knew I was a Granny Smith girl.
One year I was on a cycling team that was sponsored by Kiku Apples. Kiku Apples are only grown in New Zealand, to my knowledge. At least that's what the people at the camp came and said to us when they introduced themselves. We were each sent like crates of apples throughout the year. They go bad like, pretty quickly because they're being sent quite a ways. It's not a very environmentally friendly sponsor for a bike team. Not up there with some of the other ones, but still. And so I would always have to make things with them, like apple pie and stuff. But these apples, like, they told us that they were like the most elite version of apple that you've ever had. And they were right. These apples were unreal. Like, they were so good. You can only buy them in a store like 6 weeks of the year. They aren't even there year round. It's like there's like a 6 week window when you can eat Kiku apples.
Have you heard of these, Matt?
Fun fact.
No, this is news to me.
I've never heard of them either. And we are a lot closer to New Zealand than you are. So I'm quite confused. Can you explain what
maybe Australia doesn't faff around with the import of Kiku apples?
Well, probably not. Can you liken them to other varieties?
I honestly couldn't. They're like the crispiness of like a Pink Lady apple, but not so sour. They're way sweeter, but they have the shape of a Fuji.
Oh, this has my attention. Okay. All right. Well, if you've got any boxes of them lying around, then just send them
over.
They
have a website.
That's insane that an apple is sponsoring a cycling team.
You know what's insane?
Were they New Zealand people? Were they New Zealand marketing reps that came to the team camp or whatever?
They were American, actually. So I'm not entirely sure. Like, yeah, it was way, way more boring. We didn't even have any Kiwi riders on the team. So I'm not entirely sure like how this came about, but that was my apple story. I have a picture on my Facebook of me holding a crate of these apples because my teammate at the time and I were like, oh, we're gonna start a podcast. This was in 2014, mind you, called How About Dem Apples, and it's gonna be a comedy podcast because we were under the impression that we were funny.
And what was
genuine
the
question,
like,
how did we start talking about apples again? No.
We're just talking over each other. We're just so excited about the apple story.
It's actually called Apple Replay. So, yeah, not apples eaten. Sorry, Ian.
It's all right.
Replay is way less fun, to be fair. Anyway, I'm joined by Ian Treloar and Matt Deneve.
Hi.
Hello. Is anyone still listening? Hello, if you are. Thank you.
Well, you guys, we're here. We're going to talk about our year in music. Matt has actually gone through and figured out what we rated every single album. So that is crazy and also very nice.
Yeah, I spent a bit of time over the last week listening to the last probably 10 minutes of every episode. Just seeing a photo of Abby eating an apple. This podcast is off to a wonderful start. Yeah, so I've listened to the last 10 minutes of basically every episode that we did over the last year to try and gather all of our votes on all the albums that we listened to, that we reviewed over the last year. Put all the results into a spreadsheet, crunched some numbers, worked out some best albums of the year, some worst albums, and some other fun things along the way, which we can get into. But before we do that, I think the most interesting stat of all is that it is a year to the day that we recorded our first episode. It was December 21 last year that we recorded our Dawn FM episode. And I think we released it in January, but it is to the day. So that's pretty cool. We made it to a year.
That is pretty cool.
Oh, and we don't hate each other yet.
I feel like we like each other more, actually. if I would be so brave as to say.
I did. I liked you guys more until we started down the Apple path.
Okay, well, that's totally fair. That's my fault. I'm sorry. You guys got any weird fruit stories?
Probably not for a music podcast, but I'm sure I could think of something.
Yeah, but that wasn't for a music podcast. That could have been told on a different podcast that I host.
That's true.
Weird fruit stories.
Ian's thinking. Fun. Yeah.
I think that you can find a lot out about people by their answer to like questions about what their favorite apple is or what their favorite like stone fruit is, for instance. And
what's your favorite stone fruit?
Great. I've thought about this a lot, and I think that the best stone fruit is the apricot, but I think that it is the least consistent. So I think that nectarine, while not being the best stone fruit, is probably the most consistent stone fruit that you can expect to get a good one. Then peach, then apricot. But I think the order of what is actually the best, if it's like the premium specimen of each of those, is reversed.
Okay, but okay.
Matt's just not even engaging with the camera anymore. He's like pivoting around in his chair. He's like looking behind him. I don't know if he's looking for a fruit bowl or something, or oh, he's holding up a note. It's saying, "Help, get me out of here. I've had enough."
Imagine if we ever recorded a live podcast.
We actually have to be professional, I think.
No, we are professional. What are you talking about? We're professional entertainment.
I was about to say that I think it would be tighter in the edit, but I think you traditionally have quite a sort of loose, light touch on the edit, so a lot of our bullshit still gets through.
I tighten it up quite a bit in the edit, but I do keep the bullshit that I think is funny. So I don't know if other people think it's funny, but I'm entertained.
Well, literally dozens of people, I'm sure, will be able to let us know.
I did cut like an entire 10-minute segment out of last week's podcast that was in the pre-recording that I was like, this is hilarious. And upon second listen, I was like, I could probably cut this. So I did. Mostly because with your interview, that was amazing, by the way, last week.
That's
good. The podcast was about an hour and a half long, and I was like, I think people will probably see that runtime and avoid this episode, and I didn't want that to happen. So, but it was a great addition to the pod. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks. I enjoyed the chat.
Do we know if he ended up listening to the episode?
I sent him a link, and I think I got a love heart emoji back on Instagram Messenger. So make it that
way. I saw they liked the it's album cute. Files tweet as well.
Yeah, I choose to believe that they haven't listened.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll help. That'll help me sleep better on that. So
there is like a sliver of possibility that they're listening now as dedicated fans. In which case, hello, boys.
I'm not entirely sure how to transition out of this and into music. So let's just dive right in. Do you guys want to talk about our personal Spotify Wrapped / Apple replay first, and then we can talk about kind of a retrospective of the year? Does that sound all right?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, who wants to go first?
You go, Abby. Kick us off.
I feel like you're going to be not surprised and also very surprised about my list of things. I'm going to start off with my top album of the year, which was The Record by Boy Genius. Second album of the year, The Midnight Organ Fight, only 22 plays less, which is something that I think we should dive into a little bit, is the amount of plays, because I am willing to wager, I was going to make an Apple reference. I'm willing to wager something that my number of plays is probably a lot higher, like overall, than you guys, since I do tend to get obsessed with something and listen to it ad nauseum. Number three, I was really surprised, is Midnights, the Till Dawn edition, and that includes Karma featuring Ice Spice. And then number four is Subtract by Ed Sheeran, and number five was Being Funny in a Foreign Language. So those are my top five albums of the year. Not too far spread out, actually. Boy Genius, the number one album, had 409 plays.
Sorry, what?
To get up there.
You played that 400, one album 409 times in the year.
Yeah. What's actually more surprising going through...
409 plays of the album, or like however many tracks there are, 409 divided by 12 or whatever.
For context, that album came out around about 14 weeks into the year, whatever that was.
I have a better for context for you.
Okay.
For better for context is the number 11th album on my top 15 list is Stick Season with 235 plays. And when did I discover Noacon? It's about a month ago.
This must be the tracks. It cannot be the album. So how many...
You guys knew that I...
No.
This is incredible. That's not possible. Right?
So that means that you have listened to... 4,908 Boy Genius songs from that album. And then probably, like, other albums and EPs and things.
Lizzie McAlpine did make it into the top 15 at number 14 with 206 plays.
I think I probably listened to that album less than 10 times this year, like including in preparation for this podcast. That's incredible. Wow. I'm staggered. I knew that you obsessed over stuff, and I knew that you went real deep when you get obsessed, but that's blown my mind.
No, I am... You cannot have listened to Boy Genius for 245 hours. It's like 10 days straight of just...
Yeah, that sounds right.
No!
How do you have the time for all this? This is incredible.
I listen to music when I'm doing everything. Except for working. And I only work like less than part-time, so that's not a big deal. And I've actually gotten a lot better at working and listening to music at the same time. Even with like lyrics and stuff in English, I can still find my way to focus. I've been working on it pretty hard actually since we talked about that a couple episodes ago.
I feel dizzy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
My top song of the year was Eyes Closed by Ed Sheeran. Just unsurprising.
How many times?
Number two was Cruel, 76 times.
Okay.
I think it means I played it 76 times on its own. Doesn't include listening to the album.
Okay.
Because the plays don't match up.
I can see Cruel Matt's Summer doing some like Beautiful Mind kind of maths in his head.
Well, you'd assume that I'd actually listen to it 470 times, including the times that I've listened through the album in whole.
Yeah, so that's either not counting the times you listened to the album, or that 400 and whatever is all of the songs.
That's a good point. That could be possible. That would make more sense. But I do listen to things like slightly, just like on repeat for days and days and days. So
I still think that qualifies as listening to it a lot, because when we get to mine, the album that I've listened to the most is 334 listens to that album.
Hold on, why are you giving me such a hard time?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that yours is not. I know that that figure is like by 10 tracks. So that means I've really listened to the album like 30 times.
Is this on Apple Music Ian, or Spotify?
Well, I have a hybrid system, Matthew.
I was going to say, because I don't think Spotify actually does play numbers, right?
Spotify does for the top five, number of plays of tracks.
Okay.
And top five artists, but not albums, which is where my system comes in. But we'll get to that. We need to finish listening to Abby.
Okay, I'll go through my top five songs still. So number three was $20, Boy Genius. Number four, Emily, I'm Sorry. And then number five was Looking for Somebody to Love, the 1975. The rest of the top 15 is like pretty much the record by Boy Genius and Being Funny in a Foreign Language. But squeezing into the top 15, really surprisingly, The Man by Taylor Swift. Didn't see that coming. Old Fashioned, Frightened Rabbit, and The Modern Leper in the 11 through 15 range. Top artist? Anyone want to give a guess?
Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, 1979, Griff.
75.
Is it what? 1975, nope. Yeah. Who else?
You got the first three, right?
Boy Genius, yeah.
Yeah, Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, the 1975, Boy Genius, Frightened Rabbit was fifth. And then in the On the other half, we got First Aid Kit, Haim, Noah Kahn, Carly Rae Jepsen, and Bleachers. I feel like I'm very predictable. Lizzie McAlpine came in 12th, Olivia Rodrigo in 13th, and The National in 14th. The most predictable.
I think I probably would have guessed most of that top 10 for you.
Well,
not in that order, maybe, but...
My Taylor Swift, my number one artist of the year, the amount of minutes listening to her is about 4,000 more than second place. I listened to her for 7,786 minutes. And then Ed Sheeran was only 3,790 minutes. What this doesn't factor in, though, is YouTube, because I listen to a lot of music on YouTube.
Oh, I thought you were saying
music videos and stuff.
I wasn't sure whether you were saying U2 as in me and Matt, or U2 the band.
U2.
And then the second time around, I understood that you were talking about YouTube.
I grew up listening to them, but I've realized in the last couple of years that people don't like them very much.
It doesn't matter whether people like them. It's just whether they make you feel like you're having a beautiful day.
Well, they remind me of my dad. So I love him. Because he used to love putting on U2 when we get home from school.
And now your mom loves putting on us three.
Yes, she does.
I think the biggest takeaway for me is that you just listen to a lot of music.
Yeah, but a lot of basic music. I'm not embarrassed about it, but I am quite predictable. I'm a basic.
I don't think you need to be embarrassed at all. I'm just surprised by how much time you're able to dedicate to music.
Well, Lila and I listen to music all morning while we're getting ready for school. And it's usually I put on an album and I'll loop it. And so it just, that album plays until we go. This morning we were listening to Lover. And then I listen to music in the car. I don't know. I just listen to music all the time. It fills all the blank space.
I don't make any judgment around quality, but I think the quantity is surprising.
You're judging me?
I'm not judging you. No, it's great. Do you have a total minutes listened? Because Spotify Wrapped does give us minutes listened. Or do you have to...
Minutes listened, 25,000 minutes listened. I've listened to 100 artists or over 100 artists. I've listened to over 1,000 songs.
Apple Music must be counting things differently to Spotify. Maybe you have to complete the song and Spotify is just if you start the song and skip it or something.
This is also Apple's, I think, first year doing this in an attempt to copy Spotify.
Right.
So I think that there maybe is some glitches in their system.
Ironing out some kinks.
It's entirely possible. Ian, you want to go next? I'm excited to hear your hybrid system.
Okay. So my hybrid system, I have Spotify Wrap, which informs the list. But I don't know if that's necessarily a true reflection of how I listen to music, because a lot of what I listen to is kind of background music or writing music, because the main time that I'm listening to music is when I'm sitting at my computer working, which means that anything with lyrics is almost automatically out because it's too distracting. So I also have an integration built into my Spotify to a thing called Last.fm. Which is a thing that scrobbles music, is what they call it. And for everything I've listened to since the 17th of June 2008, it has a record of what I've listened to over the last 15 and a half years. There are some exceptions to that. There was a period when... they didn't have a connection to Spotify, and I don't know, about 5 years ago or something, when I was mostly listening on an iPod and then transitioned over to streaming. So there's kind of a gap for that period, but otherwise it's a pretty faithful record of everything I've listened to since 2008, which is quite nerdy. So that gives me the number of tracks I've listened to in the last year, which is 4,478. The number of artists that I listened to this year, which is 1,090. and the number of albums, which I think is not like full albums, but like if you play one song from an album, then that counts as a contribution to that album. So 1,827 albums. On Spotify, I get my minutes listened, which is 41,729, which is, I can't remember how many days. It did tell me, but I didn't write it down. So that Spotify Wrapped gives me a top five of Tim Hecker, Blank Mass, Max Richter, Aruj Aftab, and Sigur Rós. Which I think is a pretty good representation of my writing music, but not a very good representation of the albums that I found the best this year or that necessarily made the biggest connection with me. So I, from that, decided to do like what I actually think are the best albums of 2023, as in released in 2023.
Do we want to get to that in a second?
Okay, yeah.
Maybe save that, because I think that ties into stats stuff, and also we can do my stats quickly.
So in that sense, I think my most listened to album is No Highs by Tim Hecker, from which 9 out of the top 10 songs on my Spotify Wrapped come from that album. And as a result, my favorite genre is compositional ambient, whatever the hell that is.
Mine was alternative.
Really? Alternative? No, that's, I'm surprised, because I think all the artists that you mentioned in your top ones are just were pop artists, right? Because I got Spotify tells me that my top genre was pop for the year. But yeah, I think compositional is ambient, you said, Ian?
Compositional ambient, not just ambient. Yeah, I think
that fits in with the sort of listening you do, as you said, when you're writing, etc. I listened to a lot less music this year than you guys did. I listened to a lot of artists compared to you, Abby. I think you said you had 100 and something artists for the year and Ian had 1,000 or whatever. I ended up with 640 artists for the year. 1,500 different songs for the year. My top artists, Post Malone, number one, with 540 minutes, which I can't remember what your numbers were, Abby, but that's tiny compared to what you were doing. It was well into the thousands, I think.
Almost 5,000, yeah.
Yeah. Taylor Swift, number two. Ben Folds, number three. Little Sims, number four. And Frightened Rabbit, number five. Ben Folds, I think, is high up on the list because I have a singing playlist that I use to like just warm up singing when I'm writing music. And there's a lot of Ben Folds in there. So I think that kind of skews it a little bit. Speaking of which, top song of the year was Fire Escape, the acoustic version by Imaginary Future. I don't know if you guys know that song from a few years back. Beautiful song, but that's on that playlist. And I think that kind of, skewed that. There's another song as well by Slowly Slowly that's in my top five as a result. Two Post Malone songs from Austin, the album that we talked about, Laugh It Off and Don't Understand, the first and last tracks from that album are there. And the number two song of the year, which gives you an idea of how my Spotify is used, If You're Happy and You Know It by The Wiggles.
I was waiting for something of this.
Yeah. I'm surprised I'm the only one that that ended up with a kids song in our list. And to be honest, I thought I'd managed to quarantine my Spotify from any child listening, but obviously not. Number two on the list, so... That's kind of funny, but also a bit depressing. Top genre, pop. And yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me so far is just how little I listen to music compared to you guys. And it makes me feel a little bit like I should be doing more prep for these podcast episodes at the very least.
I think what you lack in numbers of listens to is actual insight that you bring to the table in terms of what the musicians are doing.
Also, you made your own album, so
yeah, there was a big chunk of this year where I wasn't listening to stuff because I was writing, and I'm still writing at the moment. So that there is time where I'm definitely creating rather than consuming, which I feel good about. I'm happy with where I ended up.
I'm honestly shocked that Taylor Swift was second.
Yeah, I think that's probably just me listening to Folklore a lot early on in the year. But yeah, I'm surprised it's there as well. I think I, with all the reissues as well, listening to those, yeah, I'm probably surprised it's high. It's as high up as it is, but I guess it sort of makes sense with the amount of stuff she's pumping out too.
Should we talk about our top albums of the year, top songs of the year? Because I do think that the tally of listens, for me at least, doesn't equate what I thought the top albums of the year were. Maybe number one, but there's definitely some in there that I maybe grew on me or, yeah. Ian, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think that my, what I would call the top songs of the year or the top songs that I loved this year is quite different to the songs that I listened to the most. So I'll also do this as like songs that I discovered this year rather than songs that were released this year, because I know that some of these are not in the other list. So I think probably my song of the year is Ceilings by Lizzie McAlpin.
Oh, wow.
I think that that's an incredible song. Really, really beautiful. That's the one that has stuck with me the most from that album. And one that when I listen back to it, I'm just like, oh, that is just a beautiful, perfect song. I also like a song by a Pakistani-American singer called Aruj Aftab. She did a collaborative song with someone called Asfar Hussain. He's also a Pakistani artist. I don't think it was released on an album. I think it was actually recorded for like a YouTube, like a Coca-Cola YouTube like performance thing for Coca-Cola Pakistan. but it's really beautifully shot music video of just like this slow burning kind of 6 minute duet between them. The lyrics are not something that I understand because I don't speak Urdu, I think, is what they speak in Pakistan. But it's just an incredible song that I really, really love. To transition from that, I also really liked the Carly Rae Jepsen song Psychedelic Switch this year. That's one of my favorites of the year. Not Strong Enough by Boy Genius is the first song from that album that made me really excited about the album. And Old Movies from There Will Be Fireworks, because I think that that song was just completely thrilling and made me feel great. So those are my top five songs of the year.
Abby, go for it.
I also would like to kind of go, like, not stuff that came out this year, but stuff that I maybe discovered this year. Like, I think top albums of the year, probably Boy Genius was the best album that came out for me in 2023, but, or possibly actually Subtract by Ed Sheeran. And that was a lot about the time that that came out for me, and being able to see it live as my first vacation from the baby. Since she was born. So there's a lot of like feelings tied up in that. But I also feel like Olivia Rodrigo's Guts really grew on me this year. Like I didn't love it when it first came out, but it's a regular listen for me now. And it's amazing. It's really, really good. It's pretty impressive what she can do at such a young age. So, I feel like that is one of my favorite albums of the year for sure. And, like this year also I discovered the 1975, and Being Funny in a Foreign Language came out last year, but the amount of time I spent dancing to that one, there was a lot of time spent dancing to that one. Also the album that came out, I think it was this year, This Is Why, Paramore's This Is Why. I really love that album. I think there's a lot of skips on it, so as an album in full, it's not something like that I would pick for this podcast, for example, but I really enjoyed that album. It's a good listen. Have we talked about you going to see Paramore yet, Ian?
I can't remember whether we did or not. But I did. I went and saw them. They were great. It was really, really good. Yeah, it was kind of like a 10,000, 15,000 capacity tennis center. And we were sort of on the side and up fairly high. So we had a good view of the stage, but kind of distant. I think that their catalogue of songs is just hits from start to end. So everything apart from, with the only exception being The Only Exception, which I don't like as a song, but pretty much everything else was just incredible. The band was really, really good. The staging was really, really good. And it kind of had the wholesome sort of crowd-inclusive vibe of a Taylor Swift concert from when I've seen Taylor Swift, where it just feels like everybody is embraced and welcome to be there as they are. And I thought that was really beautiful. So I really, really enjoyed it. One of the better gigs I've seen this year.
Awesome. That's good to hear. I'm excited to see them in June.
Nice. It's worth it.
As it draws closer.
It's great.
Yeah. I feel like this year, actually, I got way more into the idea of live music. Like, I've really struggled with going to see live music and enjoying it. Just the people. I'm just, even before the pandemic. But this year, going to see Harry Styles and Ed Sheeran both really kind of renewed my love of going to live shows.
I think for me, if there's seating, I've reached the stage in my life where seating is a good thing in a gig. And when I've gone to gigs that did not have seating, I kind of needed to keep limbering myself up because my back was getting sore.
I also this year really loved the album Endless Summer Vacation, Miley Cyrus's album. It's especially the, I think it's on, I can't remember if it's Disney or if it's Apple or if it's, no, I think, I can't remember which streaming service it's on. There are far too many at this point. But she did like a live version of it. And yeah, I really, really like that album. I haven't traditionally loved Miley Cyrus music, apart from like The Climb. How could you not love that song if you grew up watching the Hannah Montana movie? But yeah, I think this album is some of her best work and I really enjoyed it. Plus, there was an album that came out that was John Batiste, who I will at some point in this podcast pick his album to do, not this album, but the album he released this year, World Music Radio, was phenomenal. And he has a special that's also, I can't remember which streaming service it's on. I think it's called American Symphony. And his musical ability is like amazing. I mean, he pulls together so many different instruments and varieties of music to create just some stunning things. So his album World Music Radio is probably one of my top albums of the year as well. No, I don't want to say it again just in case. One of the songs that I think that I danced to the most or enjoyed the most that has come out recently is Modern Girl, and I think like maybe one of the top songs of the year for me that makes me really excited for albums to come. I don't know if you guys have prepared or have anything in mind for things that you're excited that will come out in 2024. But I'd love to dive into that at the very end of the episode, if you would like. But yeah, I really liked Modern Girl. And I also really enjoyed, I mean, it was my top song of the year, but Eyes Closed, I think from the Subtract album, there was a couple really good songs on there that I really liked. But Modern Girl, I think, is probably my favorite song of the year. Matt, what about you? Did you have any differences between your list and what you actually enjoyed?
Yeah, I...
If you're happy and you know it.
Well, obviously that's a banger. I just kind of made a list of albums in particular that stood out to me this year and that I really enjoyed. I didn't go into as much detail about favorite songs, but albums that really stood out to me, Post Malone's Austin, I really enjoyed that a lot. It's got some amazing songs on there. We did a whole episode on that for people that haven't heard it. You should go back and listen to that. Like you, Abby, I've really been appreciating Olivia Rodrigo's Guts the more I listen to it. I listened to it again yesterday, and it's very, very good. I think she's really growing as a songwriter. There's still that kind of like teenage angsty vibe that she's got, but also there's towards the back end in particular some more introspective stuff that I really like. So excited to see what she does next. The new Foo Fighters album as well. I think I mentioned that briefly in an episode earlier in the year. It's called But Here We Are. And it's that first album that they recorded after their drummer Taylor Hawkins died. And it's pretty stunning, actually. I really enjoyed it the first time around. I listened to it again this morning. And I really, really enjoy it. Would highly recommend it if you like just good, solid rock music. It's really impressive. And yeah, a few other bits and pieces. 10,000 Gex by 100 Gex, I really liked. Macklemore's Ben, I enjoyed. Stormzy's This Is What I Mean was really strong. And then individual songs that stood out. I did just write a few down here. The new Beatles song, Now and Then, we talked about it when it came out, but that really made an impact on me. The fact that it's the Beatles was the main reason for that. But yeah, I think it was just a beautiful song as well. And then Billie Eilish's What Was I Made For from the Barbie soundtrack. I think that's just an incredible piece of songwriting. Such an excellent study in restraint in production and how you can, if you listen to it, it doesn't sound like there's much going on in the song, but then you watch one of the production breakdowns that her and Phineas have done and there's a lot that goes into it, and it's kind of they're just masters of the craft, really. And Phineas is a very, very good producer. And I think that song is, just quite hauntingly beautiful. So they were the ones that stood out to me.
I agree about the Beatles song. It was really cool, especially the making of that song. The video is just really, really cool. And yeah, that Billie Eilish song is so good.
Mm. Yeah, it took a little bit of time. I thought it would be easy to find where we rated stuff because it's normally in the last 10 minutes of the episode, but kind of jumped around a bit where we were rating stuff, and there was a lot of interludes and a lot of distractions along the way, and one of us would give a rating, then we'd talk for 4 minutes about I don't know, apples or some rubbish, and then come back to it with the others giving their ratings. So
this is why you're so annoyed at Ian and I, because you had to spend the last week listening to us on the podcast and then in real life we're even worse.
I would say that there are times
particularly annoying today.
No, that's not what I was going to say. I think, in all seriousness, there are times when we've done the podcast where it's kind of like, oh, you know, is this just kind of not a waste of time, but like, what are we doing this for? Or like, is this the best thing we could be doing? But listening back to it and listening back to so many episodes, like, I think we should be really proud of what we've done, and I think we did some really cool stuff, and I think we have worked really well together, and I hope that the listeners agree, because I think I'm really proud of what we've done, and it was really cool to go back and get a snapshot of at least a part of every episode from the last year, and we've covered some ground, that's for sure.
That is for sure. Yeah. I mean, I love this podcast, so.
So what I did, every episode I went and noted down what each of us rated the feature album of the week. I then averaged that out for the week and then went through every episode doing that and then compiled a bunch of, lists from there and other stats. So where do you guys want to start?
Did you use a mean or a median?
I just used a mean, given this. Okay. Just three of us.
Thank you. So I just thought it was important to get that.
Get some statistical rigor. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Is this peer-reviewed?
Well, this is it. This is the peer review process now. So you can tell me afterwards if you think I've done a rubbish job, and you can give me notes for next time. I'll just give a couple of random stats before we get into the kind of meatier ones. The overall average score we gave per album, 7.49. The average score given by each of us throughout the year, I was the highest with an average of 7.98, Ian with 7.28, and Abby was 7.21. Interestingly, though, Abby, you had the most scores over 9. You had 5 scores over 9, and you gave out the only 10 out of 10 for the entire year. Carrie and Lowell by Sufjan Stevens. Ian, you gave out 2 9-plus scores, and I gave out 4.
Who gave the lowest score?
That was Abby. That was by a lot.
Yeah, that was
me. I thought as much.
That was Abby's 0.8.
Didn't I give a point something?
Yeah, 0.8 out of 10 for Diorama by Silverchair.
It's wild.
Easily the, and that was, Diorama was the most polarizing album of the year, which I guess categorized by the greatest discrepancy between scores on the episode. So Abby, you gave that 0.8 out of 10. Ian and I both gave it a 9 out of 10. as Ian spits out his drink there. The Fire Is on the Bird by Jackson Jackson was the second most polarizing. Abby and Ian, you both gave it 3 out of 10. I gave it an 8.25, which is probably equally surprising. Right, so the average score per album recommended. So as in, of all the albums that you recommended, Abby, the average score for all of those was 7.52. Ian, yours was 7.84, and mine was 7.03. So Ian wins that one.
Yes.
What else have we got here? The most consistent scores across albums. So the albums that we most agreed on. There was only one album for the entire year that we all gave the same rating to. Do you guys remember which album it was, and do you remember what the score was?
I think Carrie and Lowell, 9s across the board.
No, I just said that Abby gave it 10.
I can't remember what... I mean, I think it would have been an Ian album.
That's correct, yep.
Was it Frightened Rabbit?
It was, yep. We all gave that 8.5 out of 10. In fact, all of the top 4 most consistent albums in terms of our ratings were all Ian albums. Carrie and Lowell, Sufjan Stevens, 9, 10 and 9. Souvenirs by Alcest, 7.5, 7 and 7.5. And I Don't Live Here Anymore by War on Drugs, 7.5 and 7.6. All right, let's take some guesses. Lowest average rating. What was the worst rated album of the year on average?
Well, it had to be Jackson Jackson, right?
Yeah.
No.
Yep, that's right. Because you guys both gave it 3 and I gave it much more than that. The average for that was 4.75. Second lowest, what was that?
Let me get my list up.
Your other one.
But... yeah, my other one, yep. I got the 2 worst ones, Diorama, 6.1. Some Nights by Fun was next on the list, 6.3 average.
Yeah, that's probably for the best.
Born to Die by Lana Del Rey, 6.33. And then Through the Window Pane, 6.67.
That's shameful.
That was a great album.
Yeah, I really liked it. Let's have a look. Okay.
The scores just didn't stack up on the day.
Well, this is the thing. Ian, you and I both gave that 7.5, that album. Abby, you gave it 5 out of 10.
I know, but it's really grown on me. Okay. I've listened to it more since we did it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that won't be the only one that grew on you this year.
No, not at all.
All right. And then...
I'd like to revisit Lizzie McAlpine.
I was going
to
say, you gave that one... 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
What would you give it now?
9.
What about you, Ian? You gave it 7.5 at the time.
I think that's pretty fair for me.
7.5?
I think that, yeah. And I'm pretty sure what I said at the time was that there were some songs which I found really beautiful, including Ceilings. Mm. But there were some that didn't really work for me. So I'm happy with that.
Before we get to the top 10 albums of the year, were there any other ones from this year that you guys feel like have grown on you, or you've have the opposite, that you enjoy less now than you did when we rated them?
I haven't listened to Post Malone a lot, but it did change a lot of my perception about him as an artist. And mm-hmm. I still get little fragments of his songs stuck in my head from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
There are quite a few that I haven't gone back and listened to since we recorded them. I really enjoyed having an opportunity to revisit Diorama by Silverchair and remember how good that was as an album. There are a few of your picks, Matt, actually, which were ones that I already knew and liked that I was just happy to have an opportunity to revisit, like Godspeed You Black Emperor, for instance. I kind of regret offering up The War on Drugs because I think it's a good album. I enjoyed listening to it, but I also worry that it wasn't as substantial or connected with me in a particularly strong way. So those are my kind of big picture observations. Oh, and also The National. Like first two pages of Frankenstein, we did a bonus episode on that. And I think it's a fine album, but I also feel that in the time since then, it's kind of clarified how much I prefer an earlier version of The National and find them a little bit impenetrable now. And I don't think I really listened to that album again and have barely listened to the one that came after it.
What about you, Abby? Obviously, Lizzie McAlpine's a big one for you. And I think you even said that week or the week after or something, you said that you wanted to revise your 7 out of 10 or whatever, 7.5.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we recorded the Lizzie McAlpine episode, I pretty much, the episode ended and I kept listening to the album. So I knew right away that I had unfairly scored that one and the album really grew on me. And I am so excited for whatever it is that she's creating right now because I know she's in the studio. So yeah, can't wait to see when that's going to be released and what that's going to sound like. Mm-hmm. I think that obviously Frightened Rabbit grew on me a lot as well. I don't remember what I scored that one.
Let me have a look here. Frightened Rabbit, 8.5, all of us, 8.5 out of 10.
Maybe that is right, but yeah, I guess I'd leave it at 8.5, but I just like, yeah, I love that album so much. I'd maybe actually cut back my review of Carrie and Lowell because I haven't listened to it since, and I'm not sure that I will listen to it unless I'm really in the mood.
Yeah, you did say at the time.
It's a pretty dark mood.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah. You said at the time, Abby, because I was listening back to the episode, obviously, but you said that musically it's a 10 out of 10. But you'd had a really tough week, I think, or a tough month, you said, actually, when you were listening to that. And you said that your vibes were, based on your vibes, it was a 7 out of 10. But that musically, it was a 10 out of 10. So
I think I would give that maybe an 8.7 out of 10 now. Without all of the family drama going on at the same time as listening to it. That definitely played into the listening experience. Yeah, I would probably cut that one back. I don't remember if we rated Boy Genius.
We didn't.
But I would give that album I would give it a 10 out of 10 now if we hadn't. Especially, like, I don't know if you guys have seen any of their live performances, but they're just incredible. I think that my biggest two regrets of the year in terms of choices that I made is I wish that I hadn't chose Fun. I wish I'd just gone straight for a Bleachers album because I think I was trying to be, I don't know, I was trying to be cool or something. But I think Bleachers would have been a lot more fun to talk about. So I think I wish I'd not chosen that album. And I will always be devastated that I did not choose a Taylor Swift album for episode 13. Just a loss. Really missed moment there for me. But yeah, other than that, I'm pretty happy with the choices I made. I loved listening to Lana Del Rey, even if you guys didn't love the album as much as I do. I loved looking back and kind of digging into the history of Lana Del Rey. And yeah, First Aid Kit and the 1975. I just love their music, so I'm happy that I chose those ones as well.
I think we covered a really interesting cross-section of music over the last year, you know, and I think it's a great selection. I don't have any regrets either. I mean, I think it's funny how much you guys didn't like Jackson Jackson, and I regret tanking our listenership figures so early in the podcast. Maybe we should have saved that one for later on. But I think it's good to have a bit of a touch point that we can joke about later on. Same with the diorama. I think that's kind of funny. But yeah.
You didn't tank the listenership, Matt. You just weeded out the week.
Just halved it.
Yeah, that's all.
You just made it so it was only the most dedicated fans.
All right, let's talk.
Which actually I love, because over on the Escape Collective Discord, we work for a bicycle cycling website called Escape Collective, all three of us, and we have a Discord. And over on there, like, people just occasionally pop up with comments about where they've obviously listened to something, or occasionally I get people sliding into my Instagram DMs just saying thanks for suggesting that, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
It feels like people actually listen and people actually care, which is...
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best possible outcome, really.
All right, top 10 albums of the year as voted by us. You guys, should we do that?
Sure, yes.
I'll go from number 10, count up to number 1. Number 10, Good Kid, Mad City by Kendrick Lamar, 7.77. tied in 8th place. 5 Seconds Flat by Lizzie McAlpine. And Dawn FM by The Weeknd.
Oh, wow.
I think now we would have that quite a bit higher, Lizzie McAlpine. They're both on 7.83. Number 7, Summer Moon by There Will Be Fireworks, 7.87. Number 6, Palomino, First Aid Kit, 8.17.
Whoa, that's a high score.
Yeah.
Have you listened to that again, Matt?
I haven't. That's courtesy of Abby's 9.5 out of 10. Kind of lifted that.
You're welcome.
Lifted that a little.
I remember the vibe of it and I enjoyed the vibe, but I haven't revisited it.
No, me neither.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should.
Number 5. Sometimes I Might Be Introvert by Little Sims. 8.42.
That's a good album.
Good album.
It's a really good album. Yeah.
Number 4, but maybe should have been higher based on the way we talk about it. Midnight Organ Fight by Frightened Rabbit, 8.5. Number 3, One Foot in Front of the Other by Griff, 8.57.
Wow. That's only like 4 songs. She's up there.
Yeah. So do you guys want to guess the top 2 and the order they appear in?
I think Sufjan Stevens, number 1.
That's correct, yep.
Well, the other one, I think, did you say Alsace already?
I didn't.
I think it's Godspeed You Black Emperor.
You're right. Number 2, Slow Riot for New Zero Canada by Godspeed You Black Emperor, 8.83. And then Carry On Lol by Sufjan Stevens, 9.33 out of 10.
Whew, that's a good score.
It is. Good album. I haven't been brave enough to go back and listen to it either, a bit like Abby. And I want to. I really want to because, man, that was the most affecting episode, I think. I remember feeling quite emotional talking about it afterwards. Talking about it during the episode, and I need to be in the right headspace for that, I think, but I am really excited to do that when I feel up to it, because I don't think there was an album we listened to that was as affecting or as emotional as that.
This sort of tangenting off that, this week I've been listening to Javelin, which is his newest album, a bit, including whilst I was wandering around Eastland, the local shopping centre, doing Christmas shopping at like 10 o'clock at night, and just listening to that, and it's really good. It didn't really do much for me when it first came out, but just having a couple of plays of that during Christmas shopping was really impressive, especially the second last track. So if you are not sure if you're up for the whole album, the song Shit Talk is...
They were the main stats I had from crunching the numbers, and I thought it was really interesting. I took a couple of notes as I was going through and collating these, my favourite of which was a comment that you made, Abby, when you were rating The Fire Is On The Bird by Jackson Jackson, and you said... quote, "I don't feel like there's any songs I like," end quote.
my favorite Abby quote is, my favorite quote from the podcast is also an Abby one. in the Lizzie McAlpin episode. She was talking about getting spaghetti on your pants or something. Man, that sucks.
That would suck.
It would suck.
That shit doesn't come out.
You were right then and you're right now.
See, how about Dumb Apples would have been a great podcast? I know comedy. Despite what my friends think. Well, I'm super excited about some music that's coming out in 2024. Do you guys have any albums that you're excited about that are coming out next year?
Probably, but I can't remember. So I think you should kick us off, Abby, and I'll see if I can remember.
I did surprise you with this one, mostly because I was just thinking about it while I was running. Because I mentioned a couple episodes ago The Last Dinner Party, and their debut album Prelude to Ecstasy is coming out in February 2nd, and I'm really excited about that one. They only have I think they have 4 songs out at the moment for that album, and they're very good. One of them is really good in particular, so I'm super excited to hear the whole album. Plus Green Day is coming out with a new album.
Oh yeah. And they've got at least one song out from that, haven't they? Which is pretty good.
That one comes out pretty soon in January.
Yeah, cool.
January 19th. So I'm excited about that. See the nostalgia that brings up. And 2 other ones that I'm looking forward to also coming out early in the year. MGMT, Loss of Life. They haven't released an album since 2018, I think, was their last album. This one comes out February 23rd, and I'm quite excited for that. I didn't like their last album, but I liked the one before, so I'm curious if it's going to be kind of any of their old sound, or if they have some new sound, how that's going to be and where they'll go with that. Plus, obviously, Bleachers comes out in March. Self-titled album. So already in the first couple months of the year, there's some great albums coming.
I would add to that list
Reputation.
Yes, Reputation TV. The one that's just popped to mind as you've been talking, Abby, is Jacob Collier's 4th and final album in the Jesse series, Jesse Volume 4. It's supposed to be out February 29. It was supposed to take him a year to make that, or less than a year, and it's taken several. So knowing him, it's going to be ridiculous, and I cannot wait to hear it. So that'll be cool. February 29.
Man, if Jacob Collier and John Batiste ever got into a room together, it would be... Music would just... It would just cease. There would be so much creativity in that room that the world would just end, I feel like. Keep them apart at all costs. Just kidding. Ian, how about you?
I don't actually know what's coming in 2024. The only one that I have springing to mind, if there's a Lizzie McAlpin that's coming, I will not say no to that. But I know that Dua Lipa has also said that she's got a new album coming out this year.
Yes.
And based on the single that's come out from that, which is just incredible. I'm pretty excited by that. And otherwise, just take it as it comes. I feel like every 3 months there's a new Sadness album or EP, which I can get irrationally excited about, and that'll keep me ticking.
Are you ever going to pick Sadness for an album for us?
Yeah, I think I might at some point. It's just they are so prolific that it's really, really hard to know which... album or EP to pick. I was talking about it on the Discord this week, and I was tallying things up, and under the Sadness umbrella, they've released 2 enormous compilations and 9 split EPs this year. And then that is one of 4 bands that they're in. So there's also like three albums from one of their other projects and a couple of other albums from another project and some EPs.
And you guys think Taylor Swift releases too?
Yeah, I think they just have like an incredible prolific mind.
On that subject, I don't know what they've got coming out, but it seems almost certain that King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard will have at least something out next year. So I'll just say that I'm excited about
five
that.
Five albums.
So who knows which direction they'll go in next, but that'll be cool.
Some really good music coming in 2024. And we'll be here, probably,
yeah,
to talk about it.
Do you guys want to know?
Matt.
Yeah. Do you want to know what you're listening to over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I do. I definitely want to know. We already made you wait a couple days before you told us.
Yeah. I'm excited about this one, but also a little nervous. Yeah, interested to see what you guys think. I'm going to give you guys a clue and see if you can guess it. This is the oldest album that we will have dedicated a full episode to. It came out in 1977. It spent more than 500 weeks in the UK albums chart, which is the second longest chart run by a studio album. And it's regularly ranked among the top, I don't know, 500 albums of all time. Any ideas?
Is it the Beatles? No.
It's not the Beatles.
They were earlier than that, were
yes.
they?
Yes. Okay. Any guesses?
Was Led Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin was earlier?
It's around that time, but it's not Led Zeppelin.
Nirvana?
No, Nirvana was much later than that.
That was 90s.
Sorry.
No, that's
no.
I wasn't alive yet. Neither were you. I'll leave this one to Ian.
Like Deep Purple. Jethro Tull. It's probably fucking Jethro Tull.
It's not. The album we're going to listen
Neil
to
Young?
Is... No, similar kind of era, but Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf, 1977.
Oh, great.
This is...
Really expecting this to go in a different direction.
Do you guys know the album?
Sure. Oh.
Have you guys heard it before?
I've heard the song. I've heard
have not.
The hits.
There's gonna be a lot to talk about. I am irrationally excited about it. Cannot wait. Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf, debut album 1977.
Why would you ever name yourself Meatloaf? It's like, not only is it the worst possible combination of meat products made into edible, barely edible food, it's also just, it doesn't sound appealing as a name.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
R.I.P. Meatloaf.
Mom! Ma! The meatloaf! I never know what she's doing back there.
Yeah, there's a bit going on.
It's added to my library. Okay. Well, we'll be back next year. Thanks everyone for listening to a full year of the Album Files podcast.
Yeah.
It means the world to us that there's actually people who listen to this podcast. It's pretty cool. So thanks everybody. And thanks you too for a year of awesome music.
Thank you. And thanks Abby in particular for all of your hard work editing all these episodes every week. It's a thankless task. So thank you.
Thanks.
Really do appreciate it.
Listening back. It's always fun listening back to the episodes. I can't do the edit in public because I'm laughing a lot. But apples make much better things than potatoes. You can make like apple oatmeal is delicious, apple pie, apple cake, apple bread. I've had apple bread that's like walnut apple bread. It's amazing.
The apple is very much the potato of the tree. Matt's done. It's just you and me, Abby.
Oh my God.
Does this stay in?